Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code. Or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock after 1 second. You put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door just like me, just like Ken.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to talk about the positional reviews, continuing on with those, and we're going to do the interior defensive line. Those are the down linemen here, and I'm going to talk about those with our good friend Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how are you doing, buddy?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing well. Just finished up watching the AFC Championship game. Saw the Chiefs defeat the Bengals in a very close one, and I'm ready to talk a little bit more football.
Yeah, it sure seems like if the Ravens could have been there with Lamar, they would have been in the Super Bowl right now.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. They didn't look like a team that was, you know, a different level as the other teams in terms of everything else around them. You know, the defense was championship level. You know, you had a running game that was as good as any positional group, I think, in the NFL, and you had a strong offensive line. And those are a lot of the key factors. We saw the Chiefs win even without, you know, a wide receiver group. They were depleted there, and they were still able to pull out the win with Patrick Mahomes not playing at 100%. So I think it could have been theirs if they had, you know, the full roster.
I have heard it said recently, or seen it said on Twitter, that the Ravens didn't really have that tough luck with injuries this year. I don't know how you can get there. I think anytime you get your franchise quarterback hurt, you are so screwed, you're beyond screwed. That's why all the rules exist to protect the quarterbacks in the way they do. I think if you look at it on any kind of a weighted basis, they might not have had as many injuries as in the past, or even as an average NFL team does. Really don't know about that second part. But they certainly had a very, very, very serious injury at the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the quarterback is obviously the most positional valuable player on the field. I mean, MVP every single year is always the quarterback. It's the most important position. Lamar is a unique and, like, I would say generational talent at the position. So, like, not only are you losing a starting caliber NFL player, but you're also losing an elite player at that position who's capable of kind of changing so many dimensions of your offense. So I really think that is absolutely, you know, not true, because yeah, they didn't have as many injuries to other positions as last year, but you also lost your top two wide receivers and your quarterback. It's really tough to have, you know, a functional offense when you have those three pieces missing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we need to thank our sponsor, Liquid Death, the water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us. Let's get back to talking about the interior defensive line, because that's who we're talking about. That it started the year, I would say, as the deepest group, maybe other than safety, that the Ravens had. They had a tremendous group of safeties with Tony Jefferson, plus the big four who played all year. You know, were on this team to start the year, and at that defensive line group, Calais Campbell said we're nine deep during camp, and they had to cut a player like Isaiah Mack, who I predicted would be taken from the practice squad. I'm shocked that they still had him in December to activate him.
Yeah, I mean, I think nine deep was pretty accurate with the way they were playing, you know, throughout training camp and throughout preseason. Mack didn't, like you said, didn't make his way onto the roster until later in the season, but he did come in, play a game. You know, I think they had to let him go the following week, and then he did get picked up, obviously, as you're referring to. So I think he is an NFL caliber player. And obviously, you know, the rest of the depth there that the Ravens had, they rotated through it the entire season. So yeah, they had a lot of good players there.
Yeah, I mean, this has always been a rotational team, and it has served them very well at certain positions, outside linebacker and defensive line in particular. They've done a good job. They kept a, you know, fresh fourth quarter offense a lot, even though this year, obviously early in the season, that was part of the Ravens' problem, was not finishing. But Calais Campbell, I think, is someone, for example, who played between 77 and 80% of snaps the last 5 years before he came to the Ravens. This year is down to 51% of snaps. I think he played fewer games, but I also think the lower percentage of snaps in the games he played is really helping him at this point in his career. Played 51% of snaps in 14 of 17 games played at age 36.
I mean, that is impressive for anybody at that age to be playing that many snaps in a very physical position, demanding position. And he was used, I think, probably more versatilely than any Ravens defensive lineman. You know, he would align, you know, over the tackle, over the guard, over the center at times. And he was really consistent still, I think, at this point of his career. It's really impressive what he's been able to do. And the Ravens have benefited greatly from his presence on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Still, in terms of our personal notes we take, he probably shows up as much as any player. Roquan would be the other player, shows up a lot. Queen does too, but Roquan a lot. ridiculous number of notes on a weekly basis. I would often make the point, if my star treatment thing, if I didn't try and mix it up a little bit, Calais would be in there pretty much every week. Dominant run defender still, still a very good pass rusher. And to have him come back and really help fuel this defense with 5.5 sacks. And a lot of it is not just him doing the fueling, it's him finishing. It's him getting the early pressures on some of those sacks that were by other people. But the Ravens had a lot of dual pressure sacks this year. One man gets there, then the other man finishes kind of thing. It's just the Ravens' way right now of getting sacks. They don't have a bunch of one-on-one winners. But to the degree they do have one-on-one winners, Campbell is one of the guys who's a big difference maker off the line of scrimmage in the middle of that line.
Yeah, and he, I think if you look at some of the stats in terms of like the pressures and the sack numbers, you know, he led not just the sacks total, but like on like a snap by snap basis, he was the most productive in terms of percentage of snaps where he was, you know, generating some sort of pressure. And, you know, at, like I said earlier, at his age, it's just very impressive. And, you know, he's been, I think, a Hall of Fame level player in this league. You know, he's had a very long career. He's been very consistent over the whole length of it. And it's been a joy to watch him, I think, as a Raven. And I'm glad we've gotten, you know, this final year out of him. Maybe there might be more out of him, but, you know, he's definitely up in there in age. So we'll have to wait and see how that turns out.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting. And obviously, it's one of the really big questions about the Ravens this next season is, does Calais Campbell return? And he's a sack short of 100 at 99. He has zero career sacks in 15 postseason games, which, by the way, very much like Chris Jones. You saw that he had his first team. Yeah. Postseason sacks tonight. So it just seems to me like there might be a level of unfinished business. And I think it might all come together if Lamar gets signed in the next 5 weeks. If he does, then I think the Ravens have the room to not cut Campbell to put Lamar on the tag, because they're going to have to make some adjustments to put Lamar on the tag. And Campbell might have to be one of them. Gus Edwards might also have to be another. They have a good amount of space such that they can fit him on the cap if they make a couple moves like that. Actually, they might be able to get away with just Edwards if they really wanted to do it. But either way, they're going to go into this offseason very tight to the cap. They'll be tight for a while. Then they'll get untight by making some big release or restructure. And that's where the Ravens are going to be playing this entire offseason until they get Lamar signed. The other option is they tag Lamar, they trade him. He becomes somebody else's problem in terms of the cap, and the Ravens get a ton of draft capital, and they have a different set of problems to solve.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think for Campbell as well, you know, if the Ravens do go ahead and trade Lamar, I don't think this is a team that he'd want to play for like a last year. If he does want to stay around the league, you know, one more chance at a championship, the Ravens aren't going to be in the position to offer that if Lamar Jackson is not on the team next year. And like you said, obviously the cap situation is one that's very important for this team. The difference between Lamar Jackson playing on a new contract versus playing on the franchise tag is immense. And that's really going to determine, you know, what this offseason looks like entirely for them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how much they'll have, but it could be, you know, $30 million or $35 million difference. And it really depends upon how steep the Ravens want to make that contract. We saw a year this last year where Watson had it all. I mean, he had a 100% guaranteed contract. So in a way that kind of made it easy to give him all the money in fixed years and not have a higher load in the first year. But that contract is going to get really ugly, really quick for the Browns. And they're going to have to live with that. With Campbell, you know, $6.5 million is what the difference is between cutting him. And I think it's 6.5 and not 4.5. But anyway, if I would agree with you entirely that I think if Lamar signs, I think then Campbell stays. If Lamar goes, then Campbell probably goes as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he probably wants to get that 100 sack number. I would imagine there's someone who's willing to pick him up on you know, maybe a one-term deal or kind of like one of those fake two-year deals. And whether it's not with the Ravens, that would be, you know, I would love for him to come back and play for the Ravens, obviously. You know, he's still contributing at a high level. But I think there's probably a likelihood that he plays in the league one more year and get that 100 sacks, you know, take one more chance at getting a ring. And I think, you know, the way that he's played throughout his career, I'd love to see that for him.
Yeah. Well, I would too, and I'd love to see it be with the Ravens.
Absolutely.
Let's move on. Justin Matabike led the interior defensive lineman in the percentage of snaps played this year at 59%. And why did that happen? Well, Matabike's playing a lot more rundowns than he had in the past. He was primarily a passing down guy before. He had 5.5 sacks to tie with Campbell for the lead among the interior defensive linemen. That's really good. I mean, to have two guys with 5.5 sacks on your defensive line, I mean, not everybody has Chris Jones. Not everybody has Aaron Donald. And the guys who don't, they don't typically have two guys totaling 11 sacks between them.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something that was possibly like a bit of a change in scheme and what Mike McDonald did when he came in as defensive coordinator. I think he allowed his defensive tackle to be a bit more attacking in terms of, you know, getting upfield and generating pressure, a little bit more of penetration than maybe what we had seen before with Wink Martindale, who liked to play the run first at all costs and you know, maintain cap integrity instead of getting upfield and trying to get some pressure. So I think partially that is due to some of the changes in scheme, but I also think, you know, Matabike coming into his third year, you know, I think there was a lot of people who thought he would have a breakout season in year two. That kind of fizzled a little bit. We saw some flashes. In year three, you know, I think we saw a progression continue in that manner where we get more good plays. You know, obviously the sacks numbers improved. But I still think there's a chance for him to really take another step because, you know, you look at the film and you see him really flash like impressive traits several times. And then you kind of have a long period of time where there's nothing. And it's not a consistent like down to down or even game to game. He'll have some games where he's like all over the place and some games where he's completely limited. And I think if he can be more consistent in that manner, then he can really elevate his game to the next level.
I agree completely. There is definitely an uneven nature to his play. And there's week-to-week variation at a lot of positions, by the way. It's normal to have guys who star in one situation, they don't star in another. And it can be as simple as the guy opposite you and how easy he is or how much he fits your style to beat him. It's good theory with regard to the attacking interior defensive lineman. I'll give you another one, is that the Ravens played more defensive linemen per play this year. And in past years, particularly in the Martindale area, they've been playing a lot of 3 and 4 outside linebacker packages, a lot of race car and four outside linebackers, and a fair amount of 3 rush packages. They didn't have the outside linebackers to do that this year. So ended up with defensive linemen getting more snaps on high leverage downs where sacks are more likely. And it was good that Matabike came through for the team in that regard. Washington chipped in with a bunch of plays. Didn't really result in much of sacks. But Campbell was the other one. Urban also made some plays this year. So, you know, a variety of good interior playmaking from who they had active.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And that's, I don't know if that's because of the nature of the players that the Ravens had. They didn't really have that. The fourth defensive tackle, or I'm sorry, fourth outside linebacker who can kind of come in and be that like over the guard or line up over someone on the interior and rush from that position, that kind of had that big body who we've seen in the past. You know, obviously, Pernell McPhee is the person we've talked about many times in that role, but we've seen other players do that as well, as Za'Darius Smith. And I think, you know, they didn't really have that at that position this year, so that kind of made, you know, have two defensive tackles on the field together on a lot of like the passing situations, the third down situations where that hadn't been the case in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of a poor tackling year for Matabike. I think you might have touched on this earlier, but I'll just say that Pro Football Reference and Pro Football Focus both produce missed tackle numbers. My numbers tend to be between those two, but they're really extreme. The Pro Football Reference numbers, Matabike had 6 missed tackles, which wouldn't be great for defensive linemen. You don't want your defensive linemen, you know, getting up as high as 6 missed tackles. PFF says 11 missed tackles. Okay, now they're pretty tough, and it's a definitional thing. They're pretty tough about any time, even at a fairly good stretch, you have somebody around the ankles, you're supposed to bring them down. And so there's missed tackles and missed tackles. And more than that, there's missed tackles and there's missed tackles in terms of retracking a runner. And you can actually have a very positive play that you create by getting a pressure, turning the quarterback, you know, 130 30 degrees or whatever and get him facing the wrong way and then let somebody else finish up a sack, that could be a really good play. Still shows up as a missed tackle on your sheet. And I think that Matabike has had one of the players who really needs to clean up his tackling is Justin, but it wasn't all bad stuff. There was some retracking of runners. He's a naturally penetrating player, gets in the backfield, and that's where some missed tackles can occur because he doesn't have all that help around him. You're less likely to miss a tackle if you're not out, if you are not in space, right? So if there's other players converging to help you make the tackle and you have a hand on the guy, you're less likely to get charged with a missed tackle. It should be obvious, but.
Yeah, and I think one of the easiest places to be charged with a missed tackle is when you're a penetrating defensive tackle or defensive lineman and you beat your guard and the running back, you know, makes a quick shifty move that, you know, will make a 300-pound defensive lineman miss, but is then, you know, also going to allow, you know, the linebacker to come in and clean up. Like you said, not all missed tackles are created equally, and some of them have very positive impacts on the play. I haven't not tracked exactly what these missed tackles are, but I think it's definitely something that can be improved on. I mean, either 6 or 11, that's still a pretty big number. And ideally, you know, if you can turn some of those missed tackles into TFLs, then you're looking at, you know, kind of a superstar player if that is the kind of play that he's missing them on.
It would be a good off-season study to do, to go back and look at what I suspect PFF has their 11, and they have it per by game. I could go back to my notes. I could check the ones who I have, and that might take some additional research to find the ones that they credit a missed tackle, and I didn't have it as a missed tackle in my notes. But to find out then what was the result of the play or what impact did Matabike have on retracking the player? The problem is, no matter what I use, it's going to be a very low total of events. It's going to be a very low, not well-controlled group of data.
Yeah, it's tricky to know exactly where those missed tackles are coming from. And you can kind of guesstimate when you see something that looks like it might be there. It's a little tricky unless you have access to the full like way that they're tracking their data as well. But it is something to look at and see, you know, how many of those plays are actually resulting in, you know, a guy who bursts through the hole and gets, you know, 15 yards downfield because of a missed tackle, or a guy who gets cleaned up for a 2-yard loss, even though you didn't make it. So I think that's obviously a huge difference, and it'd be something to look into for sure.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk about Broderick Washington. To me, on the defensive line, he was the breakout player this year. Played 43% of snaps, way up from last year when he's in the 20s. Played the run well, I thought, very well. Got a lot of penetration, like Matabike. Rushed the passer well. He had one sack only, but he had additional pressures. A lot of it was leading to cleanup sacks and leading to cleanup impacts and leading to just some incomplete passes as well. But he had 6 passes defensed at the line of scrimmage, and that led the Ravens. That was one of his really large contributions to this team.
Yeah, that's an interesting stat. I didn't realize, but I do think that I agree with you. He was probably, you know, one of the more surprising players for me this year. I you know, knew he was, you know, a rotational guy. He can, you know, fill in as needed, but he never really flashed the kind of plays that made you look at him and say, okay, this is someone that I really want to, you know, keep around as a kind of like a core, like defensive tackle. And I think my impression of him greatly elevated after this past season. And I think he totally took on a different role for me in terms of what he can be on this team moving forward. You know, if he can play 500-600 snaps for you and give you some pressures, you know, bat some balls down, be a really stout run defender. Also someone who's versatile. You know, he played mostly, I would say, kind of a 3 technique position for the Ravens. He played a little bit nose tackle as well in some packages and played a little bit on the outside of the tackle, but it was mostly interior. But, you know, he's someone that I think really has continued to step up his game. And, you know, going into this season, defensive line was a kind of a huge question mark in terms of what the Ravens would be going for in the future. But if you can keep, you know, at least one of these two third year going into fourth year defensive linemen, I feel much better about them moving forward, because before it was really just, I hope they can keep Matabike, but now you have Washington who's there as well. That's somebody that you really can count on potentially as another stout piece to you moving forward.
Two young players there going into their fourth year still, but you got to keep getting younger because you can't have everybody just get about to hit free agency. Is kind of like the most desperate feeling of all. So Travis Jones, at least as a younger player, really did work out in his rookie year. I want to go back to another point about Washington, though. Washington, extremely good missed tackle rate. Only, again, the two goalposts are 2 and 4 missed tackles per PFR and PFF, respectively, on 25 solos and 24 assists. So he's a guy who helped clean up a lot. A lot of defensive linemen tend to get more solo tackles, and this was not the case with him. I agree with you entirely that I think this next year there's a pretty good chance that one of those two should be resigned. It's kind of the Ravens' way is to figure out which third year player you want to try and get value from with a what ends up being a team friendly deal. They did it with Chuck Clark. They did it with Patrick Ricard. Those became enormous central cornerstone pieces to the defense and offense, respectively.
Yeah, I think with these two players, you have a lot more upside, I think, with Justin Madubuike. I do think he has another level that he can play at. You know, his high-level games and plays, I think, are significantly more than what we've seen from Washington. But kind of the down-to-down kind of dirty work that Washington is capable of doing is still also very valuable. So in an ideal world, I would like to extend both of them. I don't know how feasible that is. I think Madubuike probably will be more expensive based off, the sack production. The pedigree is a little bit more there. But if that's kind of the decision that has to be made based on cost, I understand that. You know, we've seen that kind of decision before, extending Tyus Bowser and letting Matt Judon walk, for instance. You know, it was kind of a third of the cost of the Judon contract, and you still have a very good player who has an important role in the defense. And it might be that type of situation. And I think I'd like to see one of them extended, obviously, before they become free agents, so that you have a little bit more, just consistency in that defensive tackle room moving forward.
So let's put this in the form of a choice. And I really have no idea exactly where these contracts might end up. But let's say you could have Washington for 3 years, $10 million, extended beyond year four. So we'll play under the year four original thing. And then it's 3 more years, takes him out to year 7. So you sign him for 5, 6, and 7. Or you could have 3 years for $10 million for him or 3 years for $20 million for Madubuike. Either one of those two is available. Which one do you want?
I'd probably take Madubuike. Okay. Because I think there's a chance that he plays in this year four and really does what we talked about with him, like being that more consistent down-to-down basis player and kind of looking at being like a top 5, top 10 defensive tackle. I think that upside is available to him. And if you could get him for that contract, I would absolutely do that in a heartbeat.
Okay. And there, in either case, there might be, well, in a $10 million deal, you might be talking about maybe $2.5 million you can get out of in the final year if it didn't work out, and maybe $4 million in a $20 million deal, maybe even 5.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. I want to see it happen. So let's keep our fingers crossed because those guys have been very good. Let's move on to Travis Jones. 30% of the snaps as a rookie. First of all, did not expect that to happen. I expected some non-activations, but Michael Pierce's early injury in the year really made him the regular nose.
I think that I actually expected him to play more after the injury to Michael Pierce. I would agree with you, before that happened, then I thought he would have a pretty small role as, maybe a game day inactive. But I think that I was actually a little surprised by that because when he was on the field, I think he played quite well, especially in run defense. And he didn't really offer much as a pass rusher, but I liked what I saw from him, and he really helped control the line of scrimmage for the Ravens from that nose tackle position pretty consistently, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think if I were to say about this, I mean, one of the things is tape from Connecticut is wildly inconsistent. And part of that was just how keyed up the opposing offenses were to take care of him, because he was all Connecticut had in terms of, a defensive player. He was pretty much the whole deal. And, there are a lot of scouts complained about his tape and said his tape is not very good. You can see a big physical guy there. You can see a guy who can throw people around, but his actual game tape is not that good. Well, he played pretty much every snap. He got very tired And yes, he didn't look that great in some fourth quarters, if you're looking around at that. I think, you know, in 30% of the snaps, very reasonable workload coming to the NFL. You know, he's playing 30. I'm not saying it felt like a vacation to him, but he certainly is playing a lot fewer snaps than he did in college. And he's probably double teamed a lot less, or somewhat less, than he was in college as well. I'm very excited about how quickly he disproved kind of some of these tape things. Because it's very common. Defensive players, you know, playing the first day at any position, but particularly on the defensive line, aren't there in terms of weight or body sculpting to really play that position in their first year in the NFL. And I think Jones, he still definitely has room to get better in terms of both of those things, in terms of strength and body sculpting. But he's already shown he's good enough at where he is. Great base to work from. Kind of like how I feel about Tyler Linderbaum, honestly. Just a great base from where to work from. Didn't have I wouldn't say he had a great year in either case, but I think that in Travis Jones' year and in Linderbaum's year, both starting from a great spot.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think his upside is very good, and I'm glad the Ravens were able to get him where they did in third round. I thought that was very good value. And I think one interesting thing I saw, you know, I pulled from some of his stats was he was actually the only Ravens player on the defensive line who played more run down snaps than passing down snaps, which is interesting considering, you know, generally there's a lot more passing plays available to any given player. So I think that kind of indicated how the Ravens viewed him and what his skill set was best suited for as a rookie defensive tackle, that he really was, you know, much more stout against the run than offering upside as a pass rusher. And I think that's probably fair. That's the pass rush against, you know, good interior offensive linemen is something that needs to be learned from a technique standpoint. You don't have the ability to kind of just bull rush, you know, interior linemen like you could maybe some of the guys in college that you were going up against. So it's definitely going to be something for him to improve on, I think. But if he can, you know, use his body and use his length and power and turn that into a more consistent pass rush, as well as being a good run defender, I think he can be a very high-end defensive tackle, nose tackle in the league.
Yeah, I have it as 180 and 151 in terms of run and pass snaps for him. And only 3.5 yards per carry by the opponents when he was in there on run play. So that's, you know, that's obviously very good. And better than the team as a whole, which is maybe even more important that you have some context for that. We see this with Isaiah Likely on offense. So I just want to point out that it is something that the team has a lot of control on whether he's in on a run or pass play, obviously. And it's a function of, you know, down and distance, obviously play substantially. So does game situation in terms of if the other team's behind or the other team's ahead, they're going to want to run the ball and you're going to want Travis Jones in there. If it's third and one, fourth and one kind of situation, again, you know, lots of situations like that, or Travis Jones comes in. So I know I had heard it said that Isaiah Likely, it was somehow a tell that the Ravens are going to pass the ball. Well, no, it's a tell that it's third and eight. That any NFL team's going to pass the ball. So anyway, Travis Jones, I kind of feel the same way about it, but he did, I thought he made some contributions against the pass. And what I really will want to see this next year is Michael Pierce playing nose and Travis Jones playing three tech. I think that is a potentially devastating duo.
Yeah, I think, we'll get to Pierce shortly, but I think, you know, having two guys who are like 330, 340 pounds in the middle of the defense that are not just kind of boulders, but can also, you know, move around pretty well for their size, I think will be a really great combination for the Ravens on the interior. And then, you know, you can move around someone like a Madubuike as well and kind of get, you know, matchups where you'd like them. And you even think about maybe doing some like kind of like bare fronts or something where you have guys lined up in one-on-ones and the ability to kind of win from the interior with your defensive tackles. And that could be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and that's where I'd like to get Travis Jones is out into some one-on-one matchups on a guard. He didn't get a lot of that in his rookie year. It's not like he didn't get any, but he didn't get as much as we might hope for. And it'd be nice to see him get some of that. And in terms of how you stop the run, this is when missed tackles take on a completely different light, or not even missed tackles, just penetration takes on a completely different light. You get those guys standing up and being, one of them being, I'm not going anywhere, and the other guy on a you know, single team just twisting his way or penetrating his way into the backfield, he creates all kinds of opportunities for the other players. And run defense is such a team thing to have people flowing to the ball behind, you know, Travis Jones. And, you know, the linebacker's got to be salivating, looking up and seeing Travis Jones with a one-on-one and this penetration opportunity, and then how they're going to play off that in addition to being secure about Michael Pierce holding his double. And I think it potentially is a very exciting thing for the Ravens defense as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I think we saw the Ravens linebackers really benefit from the defensive line this year. And, you know, this isn't a linebacker show, but I think part of the, you know, ability for them to perform and produce at the level that they did, a lot of, you know, some of the tackles for losses, some of the aggressiveness that they were able to show in the run game really stemmed from the play of the Ravens defenders up front and their ability to, you know, maintain gap control, their ability to be stout and even take on double teams often with some like Travis Jones and even Broderick Washington and Campbell at times. We're asked to do a lot of the dirty work. And, you know, we see Roquan Smith sometimes having these games where he has 15, 17 tackles. And that's a large part because of the way that defensive line is playing in front of him.
Yeah. It harkens back. And this is a 3-4 and not a 4-3 like it was for Ray Lewis, who really thrived in the 4-3 with Siragusa and Adams in front of him. It's a little different, but it's still having something great about having big guys in front of you that the guards can't easily climb to level two. Takes them a little longer to get some movement, to get going. That provides a linebacker usually all he needs in terms of trying to diagnose that play, make his read correctly, get to the proper hole, and make his tackle before that guard can do anything about it.
Yeah, it is a little bit different of a NFL these days, but you know, frankly, the Ravens did have a lot of two defensive tackles on the line and two edges, defensive ends, outside linebackers, however you want to describe them, because you know they're playing majority of their snaps in nickel, so it's not that much different in terms of what the linebacker can do with two big stout defenders in front of him.
Absolutely true. Absolutely 100% true. And you know what? That being able to play the run effectively in nickel is the tenet around. It's the rock upon which the Ravens defensive church is built.
Yeah,
it is. It is. You know, and they've had all the times when they're playing 2-2-2, meaning two defensive linemen, two outside linebackers, and two inside linebackers. They've had a star pretty much at every level when they did that. You know, they went for a whole series of defensive line stars. Haloti Ngata was probably the longest lived in there, but they had Kelly Gregg in there, you know, really efficient tackler, even as a number two guy at the lowest. And they had Terrell Suggs and Jarrett Johnson, two outstanding edge defenders, you know, doing that. And of course they had Ray Lewis and CJ Mosley. And it's absolutely the central tenet to playing defense on the Ravens. I mean, dime, you can talk about, has been a big organizational philosophy, but really stopping the run in the nickel, something that oftentimes other teams will try and force you into because they like to run out of 11 personnel against your nickel. And the Ravens say, you're not going to do that here.
Yeah, and don't want to get too much off on a tangent here, but I would just throw in the fact that the insertion of Kyle Hamilton into the nickel package really improved their run defense a whole lot. So that was part of it as well. Don't want to completely ignore the fact that he was a major contributor and how well they defended the run after he became a starter for them, essentially. But the defensive line also, obviously, a big part of that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Michael Pierce. Was really off to a fine start for the first couple of games. Then he got hurt in that New England game. You know, he is one of the guys that could save a couple million on. I really hope they don't try and do that. I know they have some younger defensive linemen, but Michael Pierce, it looks like he can still play. And I think, you know, just from what we saw in what was, I think, a little under 100 snaps that he played this year, that was enough for me to say this was probably a pretty good signing.
I completely agree. And the fact that he played that many snaps in, what was it, 2.5 games? Or I think he got hurt pretty early in the third game. You know, he was out there a lot, and he was very active. He was disruptive against the run. He was disruptive against the pass. I thought he was a very good signing when they got him. I wasn't sure, you know, exactly, you know, what level of shape he would be in. He hadn't played very much football over the previous couple of years. And frankly, he hasn't played very many snaps over his career. You know, he's been someone who when he was with the Ravens was a very low snap player. He missed COVID year. He was injured another year when he was at Minnesota. So the overall wear and tear on his body, I would say, is probably pretty low for an NFL player who's had the long length of a career that he's had.
Yeah.
But he was in there on passing downs. He was in there on running downs, and he was making an impact on both. And I think people had an image of him as just this kind of taking on double team nose guard who really can't do much as a pass rusher. And I think that's completely wrong. I think he is a two-way player. And I think the Ravens saw him as that way, and they were, using him in that way. So I hope that, he is brought back. I think that they can do that. So he's someone I'm looking forward to watch next year.
Yeah, me too. And you're right on the money in terms of when he was hurt. 45 snaps the first game against the Jets, 35 snaps the second game, and nine snaps in the third game. So he was on the field an awful lot for what you expect out of your nose tackle typically, and that certainly helped the Ravens. Let's move on to Brent Urban. He was playing a decent percentage of snaps. He was right around 19-21% until Campbell got hurt. And then he got a lot more snaps then and got up to 27% for the season. Replaced Campbell when needed. Key player, definitely made some significant plays on the year. It was a year where, because of the reduction in 3 and 4 outside linebacker packages, there's more room for another interior defensive lineman to get more snaps. That said, Brent Urban, typically a run defender and not a passing down guy.
Yeah, when I was looking at the kind of the snap breakdowns, he was basically 50-50, playing run, playing pass. I think he's someone who I think is similar to Broderick Washington, obviously further along in his career, but he's a good rotational player. He can give you some pass rush. He's a solid run defender. He's someone who you'd like to have on your team as your fifth or sixth defensive lineman. He can step up and play more if you have injuries. He's still very capable. He has that length that you love. You mentioned the pass deflections. Mm-hmm. That's something that he's always been pretty good at. I think he's had a couple of field goal blocks as well earlier on his career. So
the kick six.
that's true. Will Hill. I think he was a player that, I was glad the Ravens brought back. They felt like they needed, another body there that was a veteran that could, do a lot of different things for you. And he's someone that I think could be on a similar plan moving forward, 1 year contracts, maybe 2 year contracts, but I think he's definitely someone that I would look to continue to have on the roster moving forward.
Yeah, me too. And the Ravens need players like that at a couple of different positions. I think Josh Oliver could be that kind of guy. I think Malik Harrison could have that kind of a career with the Ravens and maybe play the Albert McClellan role for multiple years. Geno Stone, if he's not, sucked up by somebody else, because, quality safeties can be a little bit difficult to find. I think he could stay around for years as the Ravens special teams captain. There's a lot of guys, and the Ravens obviously value special teams. They value kick coverage that I think could fit into that snap. But Brent Urban is one of those guys, kind of like Pernell McPhee, maybe on the defensive line, who you could keep around for multiple years as kind of being a specialist run defender. And also just a guy you can have, it's okay to have him inactive and paying him a vet man contract if he's always there to step up when you need him. And, the Ravens, I would say going forward, they really need to have a 6 to make 5 roster on the defensive line, meaning 5 actives, one of them inactive. So you have 6 on the roster at defensive line. And then I want one more guy on the practice squad pretty much all the time. And that's kind of my ideal situation on the defensive line. But unfortunately, other teams figured that out, and the Ravens defensive line has been pilfered like no other practice squad in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think the Ravens have a very good scouting eye when it comes to the defensive line, and especially in recent years they haven't had very many misses. They haven't been drafting them very high generally speaking, but even when they have taken someone as early as the second or third round, they've pretty much all come in and been, if not starters, then rotational pieces who've made, often second and third contracts in the league. And it's just a position that they rarely miss. I think they had one miss recently. I think it's the guy off Texas A&M.
Yeah, that's the one. I was just thinking about it and tried to get his name. Let me go back and I'll find him here.
I think his name might have been Daylon
Mack.
Yeah, Mack as well. It was a different Mack. Yeah. But yeah, he kind of, I think he had some issues with his conditioning, and that was a problem for him. But for the most part, they have not missed at defensive tackle, and even the undrafted players that they found, if they haven't converted them to fullback, they've been good players who have been, you know, either rotational defensive linemen or someone who they've been able to stash on the practice squad and bring up to play some meaningful snaps for them at times.
They really are on a great run with that. And even some guys that have moved on were good players. Chris Wormley, Zach Sealer, you know, both good players. They got something back. In the case of Wormley, they just had their roster was bulging when they let Zach Sealer go to the practice squad. And they knew there was a risk. But anyway, great group of selections for sure. Let's talk about the field here. Only two other guys actually got snaps for the Ravens in 2022. Isaiah Mack with 26 snaps and Rashad Nichols with 15 snaps. Mack was claimed when he was cut. I was really surprised he was still around in December.
Yeah, after the preseason, I agree with you. He was one of the most, you know, disruptive players I think the Ravens had throughout preseason, just in terms of his, you know, snap to snap, you know, pressures he was generating, quality plays. Obviously, it wasn't somewhere where the Ravens needed a player like him to be on the game day active roster. So maybe other teams were waiting to see how he would, you know, look in an actual, you know, real NFL game before they swooped in. And in this case, it's exactly what happened. As soon as, you know, the Ravens brought him up and had to release him, he got scooped up again. So, you know, I think that's one of the concerns that you have when you have good players and when you try and stash them on a practice squad, there's always that risk of having somebody else take them. But it's better to have good players, I think, than not.
Yeah, in Mack's case specifically, it wasn't the end of the world that he was taken by Seattle. He was in his fourth season, so he'd been a UFA at the end of the season anyway. So at that from that point, you know, the Ravens released him what, end of December, end of week 17 or something, whenever it was. Then they didn't have any remaining likely activation for him, so it was actually okay at that point. I do think the Ravens are going to try and get younger. So I don't think Rashad Nichols is on a scholarship or anything like that. I think they'll bring in competition for him. He may be at camp. He may even not be, but he probably will be. He's probably makes the 90-man roster, and the Ravens, you know, will look to keep him around. There'll be rule of 51 until then. So he'll just be making scale. Not really a reason to get rid of him before camp, but he'll have competition. I think, because their desire would be to get younger, I think they'll try and identify a rookie they really like, somebody, maybe a small school guy or maybe just an undervalued larger school guy that they like more than other teams. And maybe, again, they look for some positional versatility with a guy who can play fullback or you know, the other thing is an offensive or defensive line combo guy, if they could find that again. But anyway, they have a few different choices with that.
Yeah, what year is Nichols? Is he going into his third year?
I don't think he played before this year, but I'll check the year once.
He'll be a rookie then. He's someone that I think, you know, would have a chance if he sticks around, depending on how some of the other players you know, get. Well, I guess we talked about Campbell, you know, potentially you know, not finishing his career in Baltimore. If he's gone, you know, and maybe Michael Pierce as well, both of whom are not necessarily locked to be on the roster in 2023. I think Nichols might have a legitimate chance of making the roster. You know, he only played in one game, but I thought he had some nice snaps that he played. So he's someone that I would keep my eye out for the future.
I think he's an option, and he's a rookie this year. So now I always have to lean on other people to remind me of exactly what the rules are in terms of activations, but I believe with an activation, he's already started the clock running on his career, but it may be two games or something. And that he still retains his year one status next year, which would be kind of nice if true. And so if that's true, then he's on the same footing as the other players. He's just got to play better than them. And, you know, being a slightly older, probably more physically developed player, he might be in a good position to do that. But anyway, he's one of the choices. I don't think he's the choice necessarily. One thing I do is I think it's a little bit unlikely that the Ravens use a draft pick with only five on the defensive line. They still could, because they, you know, they'll if they see value, they'll take it. But I think it would be very likely to be a late rounder, probably not a three and not a one, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's probably more likely an undrafted or probably multiple undrafted players they bring in and try to just, you know, have competition, see how they look, and hope that, you know, they hit on one person. And as we already mentioned, they do have a good scouting eye, I think, for finding unheralded players and seeing talent that can be developed at the NFL level to be put into, you know, if, like I said, not a starter maybe, but someone who can contribute.
Now, we've been talking for years about how the Ravens needed to get younger on the defensive line, and they've kind of done it, you know, with Madubuike at Washington, and now with Jones. Mm-hmm. They've done a good job of using a little bit of draft capital, but not an unbelievable ton, a second, a third, and a fifth for those guys. You know, honestly, kind of a bargain. Actually, was Madubuike even a third round pick?
He was a third, yeah.
So 71, so 335. Okay, it's exceptionally good value for those players. If the Ravens are able to, you know, get a UDFA this year, I think they pretty much have as young a line as they need to have, particularly if a player like Campbell, who's, you know, the Phil Negro of the National Football League in terms of his age not mattering.
I mean, 2023, they definitely could look fairly young, but what's really going to matter is, you know, can you keep Washington? Can you keep Madubuike? Because if those two are both lost in free agency, then you really have an issue in terms of mm-hmm. the players, because essentially, you know, all those players, if this core players we've talked about that are still under contract on the team going into 2023 are all brought back, they're basically all free agents at the end of 2023, except for Travis Jones. So you really need to either feel good about them and bring keep the young players like Washington, like Madubuike, maybe a Nichols if he has a good year, or somebody else who's a free agent, undrafted player, or maybe like a late round draft pick. Or you have to kind of do some different things, whether it's looking at players other teams have let go after their rookie deal. So try and get someone who's at that same age range on getting into their second contract, and hopefully someone who's not going to obviously break the bank for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, I would think it would be a vetmin guy, but you never know. The Ravens, it'll depend a lot on the Lamar situation. If Lamar's gone, they got a lot of room to do things. They also have draft picks. They'll have different ways to address their positional needs. But if Lamar's here, then, you know, they got to make do with the resources they have right now, because there's not a lot additional happening at many other positions other than corner and wide receiver, where I think they will make some moves. I think we hit on everything in terms of the kind of the guessing games. What kind of percentage chance would you put on either Madubuike or Washington being extended prior to the end of the 23 season?
I would put it probably about 90%. I think there's a very high chance that one of them, if not both, are extended. I think that is likely that might happen in this offseason for one of them.
Oh, that would be great, obviously. Yeah. But I was going to say 70%. I think they might both want to hit free agency. Washington is the guy who probably has a better handle on things, and the Ravens are probably saying, we'd rather have Madubuike of the two. So we'll make an offer to each. We'll make an offer mm-hmm. to Madubuike. If he doesn't take it, then we'll make another offer to Washington, and hopefully he takes that. So they're almost like competing with each other for a single contract is the way I would kind of look at it. But still, I think about 70%, about as high as I can go.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't looked at the contract numbers for them, and specifically for both of them in 2023, but I'm pretty sure Madubuike hit an escalator for his contract to go up, and Washington might have as well, but he might not have. But they're not going to be like the cheap rookie contracts that you think about as, like, you know, the less than $1 million, because they're going to their fourth year, and they're going to be a little bit more expensive. So if you can extend one of them, you can actually save money on the cap this year, potentially.
All right. And obviously if you let them play it this year at that level, and then you can save money on the cap if you want to do it that way, and give them a signing bonus that you spread out over several years. Okay. Agree either way. And I, you know, it'd be nice to get four more years, including this fourth year, but years 4 through 7 out of either or both of those players.
Yeah.
All right, Gabe, always a blast talking football with you. This is an interesting positional group. It's one of the fun ones to talk about, because there's not a lot of really horrific things happening or huge holes that need to be fixed. It's basically, is Calais Campbell going to return? And what are they going to do about a couple third-year guys who are approaching free agency? But it's always great to talk football with you about that. You have your own show, The Situation Room, you do with Jordan Coe, and
That's
it's
right.
available right here on this on this website, filmstudybaltimore.com. Tell folks otherwise how they can talk football with you.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Gabe Fergie. I'm pretty active in terms of talking about football. I like to tweet during all the Ravens games, during other teams' games that I find to be interesting. I'm pretty much always willing to talk about Ravens with anybody, and send me a message on Twitter or DM me, whatever, and I'll love to have a conversation with you about it. This offseason, I'm looking forward to diving a little bit into the draft. It's one of the things that I really enjoy. I've been spending time looking at draft potential players for years and years and years. So this is a fun time for me because we get to see all those players that have a lot of potential. So if you're into draft, definitely give me a follow as well.
All right, outstanding. Other people out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, we have a new series starting. You may have heard it by now, but if you haven't, it's That One Play. Pick one play in Ravens history that means something to you. It can mean something to you for a lot of different reasons. You be you in terms of what that is. If it's history, fantastic. Great event, fantastic. If it was your personal experience at the game, why you bought this guy's jersey, whatever it might have been, just DM me on Twitter. The DMs are always open. Love to talk to you about it. I'll get back to you real quickly and get you on the list. A lot of people have signed up already. Some of the good plays in Ravens history are already gone. I'm sure you have others that would fit the bill. About a 15-minute conversation is what we're looking for. So this is some shorter content for the offseason, some nice bite-sized things people can read even on a short commute. And I want to see if it's a little more popular than some of the longer shows we're doing. Gabe, thanks again for joining.
Thanks, Ken. I always love coming on your show. Hopefully we can do this again.
All right. We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.